This is iFanboy Special Edition Star Trek Discovery and the Orville. Special edition iFanboy show on Star Trek Discovery and the Orville. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And we brought a guest this week. Mike Romo's joining us to talk about the shows. Hello, Mike.
Hi, guys. Very excited.
We needed to bring in a ringer, a Star Trek ringer.
A ringer. Oh.
It's the Star Trek Brain Trust.
Don't get me started.
Star Trek Brain Trust.
I'm wearing Star Trek underwear. I'm wearing my science officer's boxers today.
I was just going to say, are you wearing your uniform? Okay, here, quick question. Raise your hand if you had a Star Trek replica uniform at any point in your life growing up.
I had the
beige commander uniform top like when I was like 11.
I had that too. I had a Kirk shirt.
Yep, I had a Kirk shirt.
I grew up in a small house. Just enough electricity to watch Star Trek at 6 p.m.
But you have a uniform now.
I have a top, I play party on Riker in Halloween.
Oh, so you've got a Next Generation top. Okay, interesting.
Hey, well, and I mean, I've got a Star Trek bathrobe that for later on in the evening. That's a classic TOS bathrobe. The only original series piece of garment that I would ever really want to wear is Captain Kirk's sort of disco stew outfit with the green casual.
With the
belt along his belly. Yeah, that has lots of chest hair. That's basically, I mean, it's so hot. It's so hot in my office. My shirt is unbuttoned just like that. I'm really in character right now. I'm glad no one can see that. Great.
We all love Star Trek. I mean, people, longtime listeners will know. We've talked about Star Trek before. We've talked about all the new films, and Ron and I are big fans of, and Mike is as well, big fans of Star Trek.
Star Trek is one of the backbones of my science fiction fantasy nerddom history. You know, I mean, like, it as much as I love comics, as much as I love the X-Men, as much as I love Star Wars, Star Trek has always been right there at the same level. You know, so every time there's something new for Star Trek, I have to raise a Nimoyan esque eyebrow to it.
And as I think I've said before, the three men that matter most in my life are Indiana Jones, Han Solo, and Captain Kirk. So. Wow. And Picard, basically, too. But this is not a Harrison Ford podcast, but obviously he's weighted. But Shatner is truly a point of view that I respect.
So, most of the time.
Let's just say Kirk. We'll just leave it
there. Yeah, Kirk. Yeah.
And it's important to note that, speaking for Ron and I, while I'm maybe speaking out of turn, Ron, you tell me, we're big Star Trek fans. It doesn't mean we're huge Star Trek nerds. And I think there's a distinction between the two.
Yep.
Yes, I think Mike falls more on the nerd side.
I am a Star Trek geek. The nerd stuff. I mean, I'm going to bring up some nerd stuff in this podcast, and I'm going to suffer for it. But I feel like we have some good points to discuss from the nerd point of view. I might even get dorky. You never know.
So that's good. Well, as expected. Yeah.
Spoiler warning: we're going to talk about the first two episodes of Star Trek Beyond. No, Discovery.
No.
Discovery. I keep calling it Beyond. Star Trek Discovery that premiered on CBS All Access. But before we get to that, we wanted to talk about The Orville, which is a new Fox series, which is three episodes have come out, and I'm surprised so far no lawsuits from Paramount or CBS. Because it's basically exactly Star Trek.
It's a Star Trek show. Yeah, I mean,
it's more than that. Can we just talk a little bit about that and then go into the plots? Because the opening sequence is basically a mashup of Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. I mean, to the extent that instead of the asteroid slowly tumbling toward the Deep Space Nine space station, it's the same one, and the Orville just goes around it. I mean, and some of the music cues, it's like they just take seven of the eight bars of music or whatever, however you express it. And you actually I actually find it a little bit distracting how much of Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager this show really makes it feel. But then it's so comfortable, I kind of like it.
Well, yeah. As I started watching the Orville, when the trailer came out for it, when it got announced, we laughed. Connor, I know we talked about it, we laughed, and I was like, "How are they doing this?" Right? And it really seems as if like Seth MacFarlane was like, "I want to do Star Trek," and Fox was like, "Okay." And so,
it's important to note that he said he wanted to do Star Trek, not Galaxy Quest, right? Because this is much more serious and more earnest than I thought the show was going to be, at least from the pilot.
That's the thing, is that like, so going into it, I'm thinking Seth MacFarlane, Family Guy, all this kind of satires, Ted, all this sort of satire stuff, and then sat down and watched the first three episodes, and I think it was my girlfriend who was like, is there going to be a lesson in every episode?
Dude.
And I just laughed. I'm like, it's more Star Trek than parody.
It's straight. I think it's straight on the road. I mean, Seth MacFarlane's a big Star Trek fan. Yeah. And he, I believe in the pre-press for the series, he said he basically wanted to do a non- dystopian sci-fi show, which is sort of a knock at the current incarnation of Star Trek, but this feels squarely in that next generation lane. And someone in our office who also watched it before we had seen the third one, so said you should really watch the third one before you do the show, because that one feels like they took a next generation script and just shot it. And the third one was
directed
by
Brendan Braga, the producer of many of the Star Treks, and
that one felt most of all like a true Star Trek episode. I was shocked by the third one.
I felt it was it was more modern than, it was very much a very modern Star Trek episode, because, it did not, it wouldn't have ended like it did in Next Generation. And I thought, I was actually really impressed. I felt like the pilot, I couldn't figure out what the tone was going to be, because there kept being these sort of Family Guy quips and sort of these non sequiturs. I loved the line, "Will I be able to have a soda on my controls," right? You know, like there were these little things. I'm like, well, it's, but then they're playing it so straight ahead. So, but not unlike when you launch a ship from birth into the water, it goes rush and really finds itself. And then it slowly finds its balance. And I think over the first three episodes, really, really, really understand what the show is actually all about. It's not sort of this pratfall, goofy starship show. It's a next generation for today.
Yeah, I like it. I was sort of surprised for how much I like it. And I think it's not perfect. It's got some problems. I think Lieutenant Commander Bortus, who is the – not Bortus, he's cool. Lamar, who is the navigator, still doesn't really have a personality. I don't know why we need a navigator and a pilot. And that's just,
because they're two people that sit at the front of the bridge. I mean,
usually one of those is like the weapons officer, but it doesn't matter.
No. The weapons officer sits off on the side. Yeah, yeah.
It just seems weird that the driver...
In Star Trek, Connor, in Star Trek, Sulu was the pilot, Chekhov was the navigator.
It's just odd to me. Huh. Anyway, he doesn't have a lot of personality, but they're starting to get fleshed out. I really like the Bortus episode with the kid and the sex change. That was that one actually, it's a cliche to say, it really made me think. I was like, wow, this is really... really exploring some deep issues about gender identity here, which I did not expect from the Seth MacFarlane Star Trek show.
Well, let's take a step back and I guess what was really interesting for me is like Fox is clearly putting a ton of money into this show. Like when I was watching the pilot, they had a lot of people on screen. They had, you know, all these ship models. They have lots of, you know, legitimate special effects. And I was just, I was like, okay, well, I'm glad they're putting it into it. It wasn't until episode three going, oh man, I'm worried that it's on Fox, because typically these shows need to have a season or two to really find themselves. And I'm in the position of like, I just don't want it to get canceled because I'm kind of excited to see not only succeed in its storytelling, but also fail. And I'm not sure if the network has the appetite for that kind of conversation with the fans.
Well, that's Fox's notorious, reputation with fandom, right? It's that always all the fandom shows always go quickly, but you would hope that Seth MacFarlane, who is as much of a 300-pound gorilla in the TV world as any, has the clout to at least get some breathing room. I mean, it had really good ratings the first two episodes when it was on after football. When it was moved to its regular slot, the ratings predictably collapsed. But I just think it's really fun, and I enjoy the meta-ness of watching it and going, how are they doing this? They had a holodeck. And, I mean, the set is the same. They've got a robot like Data, which they're not really exploring. I thought the joke that he was like a racist robot who thought humans were awful was funny, but then it's like but never really come up again in the three yeah. episodes.
Well, and like what's funny is that like there's a lot of the Fortis character is clearly the Worf-esque yeah. Klingon character. You've got the young girl, who's strong. I forget her name, but she's got kind of Alara. Like she's kind of got the thing like the Deep Space Nine women yeah. with the nose, like Mike can correct me, right? And the yeah. robot is clearly supposed to be like Data, right? But then like they've got a holodeck and they've got the ship and it's got a warp drive and all this sort of stuff. And they stop just short. They don't have teleporters.
Right.
Oh, right. Everything is all shuttle based transport, which I love, which is great. Like, oh yeah, they don't have transporters. It's not Star Trek. Like that's their argument to Paramount when they get sued. It's like, no, we don't have transporters. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so. I'm still amazed at just watching the cast find each other themselves. Like I was really impressed with the casting. I didn't know that Adrian Palicki could sort of, she's doing a different kind of character than she normally does, or at least what I've seen in S.H.I.E.L.D. And I'm warming up to Seth as a leading man. At first, I was surprised.
I was surprised at how much I have no opinion of him. Like, I don't watch Family Guy. I've never seen Ted. I know he's someone who, people have a lot of strong opinions about and things like that. I have no, like, blank slate with the guy, right? And I found his delivery and like his approach as the captain and the character, like everything about, like, I have no, like, totally good. My only complaint is that the whole premise of the show is that he's he's been a down on his luck officer who gets a ship commission and his ex-wife is made his first officer and that, hilarity ensues. And after watching three episodes, I was like, all right, I'm tired of that relationship already. Back to it all the time. And like you either need to accept it and move on or give them a will they won't they, which they kind of touched upon in the third episode second episode, but I don't know. I just found myself, I'm like, all right, I get that's a point of conflict, but I'm already tired of it.
I feel like that was almost made for the pilot and then they sort of been retreating from it a bit because they were actually very sort of tender with each other at the end of the third episode.
Yeah.
So I don't know how long that sort of tension is going to last. But I thought the second episode was – I loved the third episode. It made me think. I think the second episode made me laugh a lot. I would be using that replicator to make pop brownies and tequila shots all the time.
Well, it's that question is like, what if we lived in the Star Trek world?
Yeah.
And Star Trek never said, replicator, cannabis edible, and it makes a brownie, right? But yeah, exactly.
And also that this is very heavily pop cultured, right? So yeah. Captain Mercer has a Kermit the Frog on his desk and they watch Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer in the third episode. Yeah. And that's something that never really happened much until the JJ Star Trek with the Beastie Boys.
Acknowledge culture, yeah.
But I like that. It's like they're supposed to be in Earth's future, so it makes sense that they have some sense of Earth's past. I'm more into the show than I thought I'd be.
Yeah,
I do have to admit, I do appreciate what's his face, Scott Grimes, playing the same character he played on both Party of Five and ER, but now as a space pilot, and that's totally fine.
That's funny.
He's great.
I think it's really interesting is that I realized how much of Star Trek has been, okay, we have this big bad that we have, there's a lot of military, there's a lot of fighting, it's a lot more missions, a lot more adventure. And this really, at least with the third episode, and even a little bit of the second episode, they're talking more about concepts and things that actually make you think. And I was like, oh, I actually haven't seen a Star Trek like this. I certainly hasn't been the movies. Right. Everything else has been very plot driven. This one, they're really going, hey, let's check out this kind of issue. And I realized that Voyager kind of dropped that and Enterprise tried to do that at first, but then had to turn into a very militaristic show. Deep Space Nine ended completely with, big stories, but it was a military conflict. So it's kind of nice to take a step back and go out and do so far more discovering than Star Trek Discovery.
And that might be a good segue leading into Star Trek Discovery.
I mean, you're not supposed to actually call out the segue. You're supposed to drift naturally into it.
Are there any more thoughts on the Orville? Are we going to move on?
I mean, overall, thumbs up. I don't think it was I was expecting more parody comedy stuff, and I was kind of surprised to find, like, the third episode, I don't think I laughed out loud once. or if I did, it was maybe a chuckle, right? But yeah, I'm totally on board. This is like this is you know, fun, you know, sci-fi porn for us. So I'm cool.
I'm suddenly very vulnerable with it. I'm like, because I was really okay, impress me. Now I'm like, oh, please don't cancel this.
Yeah,
because I just want to keep watching it, and I'm excited about that. I don't love the way the spaceship looks, but then again, I'm actually happy that I get to complain about that, because it means that I have some sort of nerd vested interest in the universe that I didn't think I would have.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be a different kind of Star Trek than what we're going to get with Discovery and what we've gotten with the movies. And as you said, everything's been very militaristic. And if you go back and catch a random episode of Next Generation, odds are it's not going to involve any fighting of any kind. It's going to involve
this show definitely scratches an itch that I forgot I had.
Yeah, for sure.
Which there's your out quote. Scratches an itch I forgot I had. Ron Richards, iFanboy.
So we have Star Trek Discovery, which premiered on broadcast television on this past Sunday. CBS aired it, and then the second episode was immediately made available on CBS All Access, which is good because basically it was a two-hour episode.
Yeah,
it wasn't really two episodes. If I felt like it was more like
it was a movie prelude. It was a movie that was a prelude to a series.
It was a two-hour episode.
Probably my primary complaint, and we'll get into, but since you mentioned it, is that where the show is going to go is not where the show is at the end. So I don't know what. I still don't know what to expect from Star Trek Discovery, because throughout the course of these first 2 hours, you know, the ship you're in, the crew you're with, the ship's gone, a lot of the crew's dead, and it's going to start all over with the third episode. So I don't feel like I even know what Star Trek Discovery is, because I don't know what it is, because we're not there yet.
Here's my thing about this. Connor, we've talked about this. I'm always excited for new Star Trek, right? Yeah. New Star Trek show, fantastic, whatever. When Star Trek Enterprise came out, Scott Bakula, awesome. I don't think I lasted that first season.
I didn't either. I lasted four.
Yeah, I bailed out early, right?
I watched the whole thing.
I was very excited for this. Brian Fuller, I think, is a great, you know, vision, you know, and all this sort of stuff. But then he left the show, and we read all about that. I thought some of the casting was great. I liked the new costumes, right? I liked the look of it. I liked the look of the ship, all this sort of stuff. And going into this, I really struggled a lot. And I don't know if it's because it's that movie, two-hour movie approach, like you said, that what they presented isn't the show that we're going to get. And I don't know where we're at. I kind of like that. I like that it zigged when it zagged, but it zagged where we thought it would zig or whatnot.
Right.
But for some reason, somewhere along the lines, I forget what movie it was, but everyone working on Star Trek really fell in love with blowing up the ships.
Oh God!
And what I loved about Star Trek was the ship never got blown up.
Yes.
Right. And this first 2 hour episode had so many ships getting blown up. Admittedly, it's cool. Don't get me wrong. It's cool. But like, I'm like, just let me stay on a ship. And I get that the Discovery is the ship, and we haven't even started with that, and it's a whole different crew. My only other thought was, do you remember a couple of years ago, all the hubbub about Paramount getting into a lawsuit with the fans over the Klingon language. Basically, Paramount attempted to copyright the Klingon language, and the people making those fan movies and all this sort of stuff revolted, saying you can't copyright a language and all back and forth. And ultimately, they came to a settlement where they got into agreement that Paramount lets the fan movies use the Klingon language and all the anyway. I felt as if this 2 hour movie was a justification of all the legal bills related to the Klingon language. Because holy shit, there was at least 25 minutes in just Klingon. It was worse than the Star Wars Holiday Special with the Wookiees.
It was like watching Narcos.
Not only was it all in Klingon, but for some reason they used the serif font as the subtitle.
That was weird.
In addition to the blowing up the ship thing, one of the things that irks me is that every time there's a new thing, the Klingons get totally redesigned and redone.
Oh yeah.
And so then we have another version of the Klingons. They look different, and I think maybe that's why they're angry, because they're wearing the most uncomfortable clothes in the entire galaxy. It's hard. I miss these sort of charming, menacing Klingons from the original series movies. You know, your Christopher Plummers,
right?
As opposed to like just sort of just these guys that stand stiffly and bark. And there's no. I don't want to say sex appeal, but there's no menace to them. They just seem like henchmen.
And you're also let's talk a little bit about this.
Yeah. Also, this in no way takes place in the Prime universe.
Okay.
In no way.
There you go. That was my other question.
That's how you kicked this off.
So technically,
that's how you kicked this off. Okay, go.
Mike. Technically, we're being told by these people that this takes place in the Prime universe, not the J.J. Abrams universe, the Kelvin universe.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to also accept that this is somehow before the original series.
10 years.
2 points, by the way, that are doing nobody any good whatsoever. If anything, are distracting from the good stuff that the show is doing, because you're constantly distracted by the fact, and also by the fact that if you look at the chronology, this episode takes place during the time that Commander Pike were in their own Enterprise. It's the same timeline. It's that episode, The Cage, happened 10 years before the original series started. So we're supposed to believe somehow that Christopher Pike's ship and Spock are potentially able just to pull up alongside the Discovery and say, hey, when did you get that ship?
Right.
And what's like, with this, like, hang on a second. Wait, before we continue, Mike, you are a fucking nerd. I love it. Good job.
It really bothered me last night because when I saw the hologram take a seat on Michael's desk and going, whoa, 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 they don't even do that shit in Star Wars, right? And you're asking me to believe that 10 years later we go from walking, talking holograms that actually turn in space to look at the other person in the room, which no one does, to go to the original series touchscreen panel, screen on the deck.
I agree with that 100%.
Like,
well, here's the problem.
Why distract the audience that way? It doesn't matter. This can totally take place after Voyager. It can absolutely take place after the movies. There's no reason for this to take place before the original series.
The people who make the shows feel the need to add, you know, like this is why Epcot is outdated. Is the moment that you make something in the future, the next thing that comes on after it is outdated to it, right? And so of course they're making a show that they're not going to have dials in the numbers like it was in the original series, because now we have the technology to do that and all that sort of stuff, right? So I understand why they did it. I agree with you that they shouldn't have done that though.
They also did it so they can have characters. They can have Sarek. They can have Harry Mudd's coming in. So that I
would argue that the audience that is watching this show doesn't need that.
I agree. I think it's wrong too.
But they're trying to draw you in.
No, I'm already in. I paid $6 or whatever. Yeah. And okay, a little bit of a parenthetical. I know that most of the people in the world get to watch this on Netflix, or in Canada, you get to watch it on Space Network, or whatever, Space TV. But here in the U.S., we have to watch this thing on the CBS All Access app. And I want to let you know that on the Apple TV, the CBS All Access app does not show this amazing TV show in 5:1 surround sound. Nope. It shows it in 2-channel left and right. So all those hours and hours of sound design and all that work is being thrown out the window. And so we're getting something that sounds not nearly as good as the rest of the world gets it. And they're getting it. And we're paying extra for it for a lesser quality product. I just need to put it out there. I think that's a real, real fumble by CBS. This is their biggest draw to the app. And you have a bunch of nerds like me going, well, why is it only 2-channel? I want to be in this ship. The Orville's in 5:1. Why can't you do that?
Yeah.
This show is really exposing a lot of nerdery.
A lot of Mike's nerdery.
So, but all that being said, I like it. I like, Connor, what you said about it. It's almost like a backdoor kind of way of backing into the story. I'm kind of liking that our point of view is not from the captain. I kind of like the fact that what it looks like in the third episode, she's not even in Starfleet. And I've always really appreciated getting a chance to look at the future, not necessarily within the confines of the Federation. So I appreciate that new take on this. I kind of hope we don't see Discovery for maybe one or two more episodes. It builds the universe more fully for me. But it's just frustrating that I have to be distracted by touchscreens when we know that touchscreens don't exist that's across the quadrant.
I'm going to devil's advocate and argue, Mike, that's part of the the who cares, go with it aspect of it. You know what I mean? Like yeah, it's 2017. They can do different stuff with TV shows than they could in 1967. So now we're gonna get different stuff. That's what I'm saying. I'm fine with throwing that to the wind. I'm fine with that, right? Connor, I'm more along the lines with you, and Mike also with you, with how does it line up in the timeline, in that is, you know, with the Spock being on Enterprise and is Sarek younger, you know, like the Sarek has Michael at the, you know, the woman who was on The Walking Dead as his ward, you know, right. Do you get any reference to them, you know, Spock being there? I feel like they might have fumbled the timeline aspect that much. As far as uniforms go, every show always introduces a new uniform, and I like these uniforms. I do like them.
Yeah.
I like how the sides reflect the communicator lid, right, with the kind of the grill pattern along the side. I like these uniforms. I think they're fine.
I'm not saying they're bad uniforms. I'm just saying if it takes place in the same timeline as the original series, and as we just established, it takes place directly next to the pilot of the original series, then they should be wearing the same goddamn uniforms as the original series.
Hey, hang on. Have you ever seen the original Christopher Pike pilot uniforms?
Yes.
Yeah.
They of course they're not going to wear those. Those look awful.
It doesn't matter. They established they're in that timeline. They have to wear them. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. You know, we used to have this conversation all the time when it came to comics, right? Don't worry about the continuity. Enjoy the story. The thing about Star Trek, you know, apparently, all the novels, the paperback novels that happened for Star Trek, they're all in canon. They're all part of a continuous continuity. One of the aspects of Star Trek, for better or ill, is that it's part of an ongoing legacy where you could watch it with a friend and go, oh, that's a callback to this, and this mattered here, and this, they're wrapping up that story here. They're acknowledging that character there. And that's kind of the fun of it. And I get throwing it out. I mean, no one wants to watch these actors playing with little plastic cards when talking to the computer. I totally get it. I guess my point of view is that there's not enough value in the story to have it happen before.
That's right.
When you could have just as easily been after Voyager.
And it just comes off as lazy. Like, I agree with you. Like, I don't expect them to have little squares that they plug in the computer. Although those did predict 3.5-inch floppies. I will
they
say that.
They did. And
me
the
and my
iPad.
Dad used to say that. Yeah, and the iPad. Yeah, but or tablets, Mike. Let's not be total sheep.
Sorry.
But like, it would be nice to have the computer's voice be Majel Barrett, like they did on Next Generation. You know, like you can toe the line between the difference between 1966 and 1988 and 1995 and 2017 by having little touches throughout all the stuff to remember the legacy. But as long as the spirit of the show and as long as the nature of the stories reflect the Roddenberry vision of Star Trek, then I'm totally fine with it.
Well,
right now, it doesn't. Well, I was gonna say, right now, from what I saw, the Orville is way more of a Roddenberry Star Trek show than Discovery.
Well, I just want to put one more pin into the final discussion about the timeline before we get to that, because I do think you're right. I think they should have had the guts to do what they did with The Next Generation, just set it in the future. It would have solved all their problems. It's not like they're going to be backfilling the story anywhere else. You know, it's not like they go, oh shit, we're going to contradict something. It's done. The original timeline is done. They're not going to do any more movies. Yep. It's not like you've got to contradict anything. Just set it 100 years past Next Generation. It's over.
And frankly, guys, you don't even need to change the story that much.
No.
There could easily be sects of the Klingon race and the society that don't want to be in the Federation anymore. They're gathering all their sects and they're rebelling against the Federation. I think that's a much more exciting story where the Klingons are like, you know what? We want out. We're becoming weak. The most dangerous words should be, you know, attack, not we come in peace. That's a whole new story. It brings the whole canon up to date, and we can go on without having these kinds of distractions.
Or 20 minutes of just Klingons talking to each other in serif font.
So one of my main complaints, and I did overall like it. I didn't love it, certainly. I didn't actually watch any of the previews, so I don't know what's coming. It doesn't really matter. I don't care. I just didn't watch it, so I don't know what to expect. But one of the things I was discussing, and I really don't like the Lieutenant Saru character, who's played by Doug Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hard for me to say anything distinctively because all of this is now over. I mean, he's going to be in the next. He's still there.
Is he the one whose race is designed to be eaten?
Yes. Yeah. But at least in these two episodes, and it's all I can speak to, it felt like they were trying to recreate in some way the Kirk McCoy-Spock dynamic in which Lieutenant Saru and Michael Burnham were constantly arguing with each other. Except these two were really arguing with each other, whereas Spock and McCoy were sort of more bickering. It was more of a philosophical debate. This was like they were elbowing each other off of screens and they were undermining each other. And it was just like, this is totally against the Star Trek ethos. In fact, that was a lot of the problems they had later on when they wanted to add more conflict and Roddenberry wouldn't allow it. But like, this is like taking that to the nth degree. They were arguing and knocking each other over. Right.
I read somewhere that they wanted to show a less harmonious federation. And again, maybe in the future, there's more stressors on the organization and things are happening and there's more distrust. Not unlike today, right? And then it would be a little bit more relevant. There had to have been some sort of roadblock by Paramount and the movies that forced them, because if you told me this took place in the Abrams universe, I'd be like, yep, that makes perfect sense. This is great. Yeah. Even as a prequel.
The distinction to make this in the Prime universe is a curious one because maybe you're right. Maybe this is sort of fence or roadblock. I think the reason why they couldn't have just done a parallel to the Enterprise is because they would want to update the costumes and then it looks too much like Abrams and it's confusing. They needed to differentiate themselves. You know, I don't know why the point earlier that you made was that there's a fear amongst Paramount to go forward in Star Trek. Well, you know, with Enterprise and now with this, we've got to go backwards. And just go forwards. Give us the chapter after Voyager. We're ready for it. Like, I think fans have been dying for that. So.
Isn't that the whole tension between CBS and Viacom and Paramount and I don't know, maybe somebody else, but it seems like Paramount wants to own the movie conversation, and CBS can and is able to own the pre-movie stuff on TV, and they're just really trying to build a wall between the two. I think the shows suffer a bit from it, and it's frustrating for the fans, because I think Star Trek is really about what we have as a potential for the future. And by putting it in the past, we already know the limitations. We already know what's going to happen. It is a little distracting. And I guess one thing I forgot to mention is that Star Trek should be for everyone. Like, I think the whole idea of having it behind this paywall, really, I think Roddenberry would be spinning in his grave, frankly. I wish this was on a CW or somewhere else where it could just have a life of its own, where anybody could see it. You didn't need to have a tablet or some weird set-top box. You could just go watch.
That's a whole nother thing. Roddenberry would have been rolling over in his grave back during Deep Space
Nine,
I think.
That's true.
But,
this just sounds great.
You would want to say that. Show. That the Orville felt more like Star Trek than this feels like Star
right.
Trek.
So I say the Orville felt more Roddenberry-esque than Star Trek Discovery. Yeah, I don't know what Star Trek is anymore these days.
Well, Star Trek has been, for the past few years, militaristic in tone. Each of the
dystopian
movies had a big bad. Yeah.
Which made sense when they were doing it in the 80s with the original series when it was an allegory to the Soviet Union and the Cold War. And then that ended. Yeah. And then they brought the Borg in, and that became the thing, and it just.
Hey man, what's the original pitch for Star Trek?
Wagon train and stars.
Wagon train to the stars.
Connor's got it. Wagon train to the stars. Give me that.
Yeah. Well, and ironically, that you do have that in the shape of Orville. Yeah. I mean, clearly, what they're doing. I love that they're. It was so Star Trek that third part of it where they're splitting the asteroid in two so it doesn't blow up that. That planet. That is a perfect Star Trek opener. Yep. They're doing something good.
Well, which this started with. They were helping this planet who didn't have water, and then it started with that feeling, and then it went deep into this Klingon. And so I guess one of the things you should know at the end of a episode, let alone the second episode, is what this show is about. And I don't know what this show is about. Is it about the war with the Klingons? I assume it's going to be, but I don't know for sure because, again, they blew up the whole status quo at the end of the second episode. So I don't even know what – someone says, what is Star Trek Discovery about? I wouldn't be able to tell them what it's about.
I don't know either, but I watched the preview of, like, this season on Star Trek Discovery, and I think the fact that they made Michael a prisoner who gets, you know, like she gets prosecuted for a mutiny and then gets kind of pulled onto the Star Trek Discovery by the captain for whatever reason, I think that's compelling. But I'll tell you – that captain, sure, I'm curious about this guy.
Jason Isaacs?
You know what I mean? Yeah, he seems like a good captain role, and so like I'm my curiosity is piqued with it. I'm not immediately sold, but I'm willing to give it a continuing shot.
That's what's so interesting about it, because what we had was the Star Trek Shenzhou, or however you pronounce the ship, and that was the prelude movie to Star Trek Discovery, the series. And
it was almost like the Battlestar Galactica movie that kicked off the show.
Very much so. And it would have been, I think, and it would have been more successful if it would just had been a 2-hour movie. And it would have been more honest, and as a way of like, go, you know, see what Discovery's really like on the online platform. I think this show right now, it's all about Michael. It's her story. Yeah. It's not the story of the ship yet. I don't think I've ever seen such attention paid to a single character on a Star Trek. You only see that happen once in a while with Picard, right? Because he was, but most of the time,
it's been an ensemble, right?
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah, I can't even comment on that because we don't know the new ensembles yet unrevealed to us. But I just think
exactly right.
I think she is interesting. However, I think it's really problematic to have a character who is now Spock's somewhat sort of half sister character.
Yeah, that's
and
weird.
Yet it's never been mentioned in the history of Star Trek that he has this, you know, adopted sister. Again, they caused all these problems for themselves. They didn't need to cause.
And it would have given him more insight into humanity to have been raised with a half sister who was human. That's like it. Just having an adopted sister that was human. Like, I'm very interested because there has to be a value that comes out of that relationship. Otherwise, it's just doesn't matter.
The thing is, we don't know that's not going to happen. We saw the prelude movie. We haven't seen anything. Who knows what they have in store? I think she – I forget the actress's name, but I liked her on The Walking Dead. I think she's fantastic.
She's good.
I thought she was great in the first two. I mean, like, I thought, you know, like, it, you know, I thought they the way they balanced her upbringing gave us the backstory on her story on all the stuff and fueling her, you know, the choices she made in it to do what she did and all that sort of stuff. I thought, you know, the scene of her in the jetpack was cool. You know, like there were moments in this where I'm like, all right, cool, I could see this. But, you know, but again, you know, what we saw was not what the series will be. And so a lot of open questions.
I think she deserves a lot of praise for really being a human that was raised on Vulcan. I mean, she had the tone. It was fun to watch the way she attacked, grappled with a concept, with a problem, with the situation, and struggle between sort of this training in logic and then being able to acknowledge your humanity as well. I thought she really did that quite elegantly. While there were lots of times when I rolled my eyes during the dialogue, especially at the very beginning, so much exposition.
It was real rough.
But that's Star Trek.
I know, but it doesn't. It doesn't have to be that way. But
yeah, but it's not. It's not unheard of.
And even her arguing, but then you know, even her arguing with the cell, the Briggs computer. I was like, okay, whatever. But then I'm like, but you know what? She did a great job.
Oh, that scene was really cool. That was cool. Like having the ship get a whole shot in it and only like the containment field keeping her
That's
safe.
That's a good idea.
Like that. Yeah. I was like, how have we not seen that yet? That was very clever. I thought there was a lot of really good moments in those first 2 hours.
Yes, for sure.
You know, and they left maybe it's good because it's asking a lot of questions and has got our, you know, our imagination kind of running with it. But Connor, I'm with you and just kind of I'm a little nervous because I just don't know what to expect from here on out.
I also just hope people watch it. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, a lot of the things I read online are just like, well, I'm not going to pay for it. It's like,
That's a whole other thing.
That's a big deal. Yeah. You go to Star Trek conventions and like it's supposed to be all of us come. I mean, I'm really exposing myself here, but if you do go to a Star Trek convention, right? It's like you kind of have a shared vocabulary of all the shows, and now we're gonna have some folks like, well, you know, I just refuse to pay for it, or they're gonna pirate it, and then everybody's screwed.
But that's a choice that CBS has made, and the people who are into it can pay for. I mean, I don't know. I was already a member of All Access. It wasn't a big, leap for me. You know, like I'm a proponent of the. I don't want to pay the cable company any more than I have to, and so I would much rather pay $5.99 here and whatever there.
Pay every network on TV $5.99, so then you're paying three times as much as you pay the cable company.
Not for that. But
you have to be able to bump into Star Trek as you're going through the channels and go, oh, great, I love this episode. That's Star Trek is an ongoing conversation. It should be open to all. But it is.
I don't disagree.
I mean, it's not where it's at right now, and maybe they'll share it with the rest of the world later. I think it's really interesting. It's the first time that we've had two episodes of a show that we know nothing about. Really, all we have, to Connor's point, really, is that we know the main character, we know the scared guy, and that's really it. We haven't even seen the ship, and again, I've just got to say it. If the Klingons are attacking the Federation, you'd think you would see a Constellation class starship like the Enterprise come in, because that's going to have the heavy weapons, but none of that. I mean, why did they even distract me from? Why should I even be thinking of that?
How nice would it have been to have just gotten one reference to like the Farragut? Or any other ship in the fleet.
It's coming.
It's much cooler if this is a show taking place in the future. Obviously, the technology is more advanced than any Star Trek technology we've seen. We've never seen fucking walking holograms. Is he walking around in his office in the other ship?
Why would you even do that? You would never even do that in a regular science fiction story where the guy is turning around to look at somebody else. Is he on his? Did he have to stand up at his desk and he's
guys,
turning?
Guys, your nerd badges are flying, man.
They're absolutely flying because these are all self-inflicted wounds. If they said this is a show taking place in a future you've never even seen before, how cool would that be? Then you could go crazy with the technology. But by going crazy with the technology, you know how it is.
Someone goes, "What if we did it? What if we had this conversation be a hologram? Oh, that's awesome!" You know, like I get why they did that, but
it's just shown the last. My fantasy is the last few minutes of Nemesis, whatever the last Star Trek film, and then go
from there.
100 years later.
Yep. I'm less upset about the hologram and I'm more upset about the serif subtitle font on the Klingons.
Well, that's your nerd
shit. Right, yeah, we all have our battles. That's what it comes down to. You know, I'm more concerned about the 20 minutes of Klingons talking to each other in Klingon with serif subtitles because oh my god, that was interminable.
I've never thought I would yearn to go back to Germany and listen to people talk than I did during that Klingon scene or the Klingon sequences.
Just so many teeth.
We're getting real negative, but I did.
Oh, no. We're not getting that. This is the best part about Star Trek is debating. I mean, we are very lucky to be able to even record this show. Now we have two shows that sort of carry on this spirit of Star Trek in similar but different ways that we can look forward to watching. I mean, what a great position to be in. The Expanse, too.
I would much rather have. I mean, the thing that bothered me about Star Trek Enterprise was that it was so bland it wasn't even worth discussing. And I didn't watch it all, so I can't really go into detail about that or whatnot. But at least this has got us talking and got me kind of curious, and I want to see more. So that's the important thing of the first episode test, right?
It is interesting. I'm glad and interested that they're releasing it weekly, so they're not doing the big dump. So I'm glad that we're able to have these conversations over and over again, not just all at once, and have that weird Netflix problem.
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I hope it's a good show. I want there to be a good Star Trek show. I like that there was a movie series happening simultaneous to a series happening. That was how it worked for most of my life, and I liked that. And if this is successful, I hope it's successful. I hope it's good. I like Jason Isaacs a lot, so he's be a nice addition to the show.
I'm very intrigued. I liked what I saw, what limited I saw on that trailer. I know nothing about him, but
could you imagine being cast as one of those actors? And Discovery, only to find out that you're only in the first two episodes and that's it, and it's all other.
Well, that was Michelle. She got the guest star and credit and all. That's also a problem too. And watching the credits, seeing that she was, Michelle Yeoh was guest starring, I'm like, oh, she's not gonna survive, So.
And what do you guys? My favorite breakout star though has to be Daft Punk lady. I loved whatever that was all about.
I feel like between Daft Punk and the alien that we don't like, a little more neurotic than I think we need or whatnot. I feel like they were trying too hard to make it diverse.
Well, Robot Head Lady was distractingly diverse. Yeah. I mean,
I don't mean diverse in that like Michelle is African. Sure. I don't mean diverse in like diversity. I'm saying they're trying to make it too alien or too like, it's weird in space. See,
it's like the cantina is actually piloting the spaceship. It doesn't necessarily need to be that crazy.
Right. Exactly.
It's fun to look at. It is funny that Orville is so much more bright and beautiful. I mean, he's a very bright pilot. I think they toned it down a little bit in the other episodes. And then again, we're stuck in this Star Trek world of dark, dark.
How does anybody get any work done when their workspace is so dark?
How about at the very end with the trial? You can even see their faces. How are they supposed to look at their notes?
That's true. But also, both shows, I feel like the Orville less show than Star Trek Discovery, but both suffer the lens flare-itis.
Oh, sure.
You know, like enough with the lens. Like, I get it, J.J. Abrams, but enough with the lens flares. Oh, jeez. No.
So I did like it.
I did too.
I'm hoping to one day love it. But, you know, it's a new show every Sunday to look forward to. So every Sunday on CBS All Access. Which I, like Ron, already had, so I didn't have to add it to my system. I'm happy to pay for the good fight.
Yeah.
So this is just the bonus.
Surround sound. I just installed two speakers on my ceiling to varying degrees of ineptitude and consternation, and I would like to use them more.
Oh, well, maybe use a better piece of hardware there. I'm just saying.
No, I mean, they're great speakers. Let's just say.
I'm not talking about the speakers. I'm talking about the little box, but that's all.
Is it 5.1 and on the other boxes?
I don't currently have 5.1 set up, so I'm not sure if on Chromecast it was working as 5.1 or not. But I would just say, like, the Apple TV isn't the most cutting edge TV delivery device. That's another podcast.
That's another podcast entirely. but I'm happy to show up.
Hey, look, we've invented 4K. No, you didn't. Sit back down.
But what a great compelling beginnings to both shows. It's going to be interesting watching Star Trek find its groove. It's been a thrill watching Orville set its tone.
We're going to get a full season of Star Trek Discovery. It was fully purchased first season, much like The Good Fight, the other high-profile show on CBS. So we're going to get a first season. I don't think they're going to pull the plug on Star Trek too early.
Especially with so many eyes on this thing right now.
They're sort of committed to it being its flagship show on a system they want people to subscribe to. So I think we're going to get that. Orville, I'd say it's 50-50 pick'em that whether or not it survives the season just because of Fox's track record with expensive genre shows.
But hey, given where we are right now, the start of a new TV season, for us sci-fi nerds to have two shows to choose from with different tones and like all built from the same kind of genetic stock, it's not that bad, you know, like, and neither one of them are completely laughable and avoid.
I think
we're very lucky in that regard.
And in fact, with the new landscape in which no one really knows anything about who's watching what, I think this is this, unless it's a total abject failure, I think there's a good chance that we'll get Orville sticking around.
And Seth MacFarlane's clout helps that, I think, in this case. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So that is that. Do we want to rate these things? Or
ratings. Ratings.
Ratings. Let's do
it. Ratings. So what is our scale, Connor?
One
out of five.
One out of five. One being the lowest Electro, five being the best Electro. What would... one out of five. Connor, rating.
The Orville?
Yeah.
For the Orville, I'm going to... I haven't even thought about this. I'm going to give the Orville a 3.5.
Oh, come on.
All right, Mike.
4.
I give the Orville a 4 as well. Star Trek Discovery, Connor.
Can I change my Orville number?
Yeah.
I want to change Orville to 4, and I'm going to change Star Trek to 3.5.
Oh. Okay.
Mike?
Oh, man. That you're right about the font. no, you know what? I'm gonna give it a 4, but I'm gonna put it in pencil.
All right,
it's a 3.5.
It's a 3.5. I'm contemplating making it a 3 to penalize the font, but I'll be kind and I'll just stick with a 3.5. So
right, and to be fair, we haven't seen Star Trek Discovery yet.
That's what I mean. It's hard to rate.
Yeah, that's fair. That's why I like Mike's putting in pencil. That's good. With an eraser at hand, ready after a couple episodes. So.
Sticking with it.
So many continuity. Yeah, we're all sticking with it. But.
Yes and yes.
Okay. Mm. All right. So. If you have thoughts on the Orville or Star Trek Discovery, you can go to ifanboy.com. There'll be a post on this show. You can tell us what you thought. And as we do, we'd like to talk about these genre shows that we're interested in. The first episodes of, I don't think there's any. Oh, there's Inhumans later this week.
Yeah,
the Inhumans this week. Pilot, which we'll be talking about, I guess, next week. So you can look forward to that in a week. I totally forgot about that. Mm. I just happened to look up my calendar and see the name on it. So. Until the Inhumans, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
Mike.
Live long and prosper.
LLAP.